welcome you all again, to those who I didn't welcome before, but pleasure to welcome you all to the Zoradora Learning Program here at YU, to reach alumni back to the base. It's a pleasure to welcome you, some for the first time, to Yeshiva. We have another tremendous opportunity now to learn from Rabbi Leibowitz, the director, the Arbisfeld family director of the Joseph, Rabbi Joseph V. Soloveitchik Smicha Program. I hope I got that correct. We have a tremendous opportunity to learn from Rabbi Leibowitz, who's a gem within the Yeshiva. I don't want to take any more time, please.
Thank you so much. Okay, great. Thank you, and welcome, welcome everybody to Yeshiva. It's wonderful to see all of you here. It's wonderful to see Doros learning together. What I decided to talk about this morning is just to go through some of the more interesting questions that have come to American rabbis as a result of the war in Israel. Obviously, when it comes to the impact on people's lives, it's Eino Doma. We cannot possibly compare or even put in the same sentence the impact on the lives of American Jews in comparison to the impact of lives on Israeli Jews, and the kinds of questions that Israeli rabbis, obviously most notably people like Rav Rimon and Rav Asher Weiss, have been dealing with on a daily basis are just absolutely mind-boggling. However, even in America, the questions that we've been getting have been a little bit different since October 7th. Someone asked me, I've mentioned in a number of shiurim, that someone asked me recently if we find, as an American rabbi, that a lot of people are coming with problems of emuna, that they're struggling with their faith since October 7th, that how could God let this happen? How could such things happen to innocent people? And how do they deal with their faith in God? And maybe my community is an anomaly, but I don't think it is. I found that almost nobody has come to me with that issue. The greatest increase in the topic that people are coming to me about is, can you please write a letter for Nefesh B'Nefesh? I mean, that's it. The interest in Aliyah seems to be extremely high right now, and halavai, the actual follow through on the Aliyah should be very high as well. But having said all that, the halacha questions that come up, and maybe I'll just mention a few of them. I just printed out some of my notes from the different questions that came up over the last few months. Turned out there were about 10 interesting questions that came up. So it's not like a top 10 list that I was aiming for a dafka 10, but it just came out to be around 10. Anyway, so maybe I'll just mention a few of them. You'll tell me if there's any of them that strike you. Maybe we could very quickly, we only have a half hour, so maybe we could very quickly discuss some of the inyanim related to the answers, although we're not going to give a thorough shiur on any of them. So one that came up in Yeshiva right here was that we have a program in Yeshiva that I'm sure many of you are familiar with called JSS, which helps students who do not have much of a religious background begin to learn about Yiddishkeit. And one of the programs they were doing in JSS, which happens to be I share a shiur room with the JSS. As soon as they finish, we come in. So Smicha and JSS, only in YU that such a thing could happen, that such different types of guys are able to see each other and interact on a regular basis. But they were making tzitzis. They were doing a tzitzis tying project in JSS. And one of the guys that was involved in tying the tzitzis is in the middle of undergoing a gerus. And it's a gir l'chumra. So technically, he's currently a Suffolk Jew. He may or may not be Jewish. So the question was, is this fellow allowed to, what do they do with the tzitzis that he ties? And then there was a follow-up. The follow-up was, he already tied a bunch of tzitzis. And there's a big pile of tzitzis. So they don't know which ones he tied. In addition to that, they instructed the students in advance that, listen, we're tying tzitzis, we're doing our best to provide all the chayalim with tzitzis. Do not tie tzitzis on Shabbos, right? You're not allowed, that's a malacha d'oraisa, to be kosher, you're not allowed to tie tzitzis on Shabbos. One of the students missed the announcement, and he was so taken and moved by the initiative to tie tzitzis that he spent all Shabbos tying tzitzis, and he dumped those tzitzis in the pile as well. So they now have a pile of tzitzis that includes tzitzis tied by a Suffolk Jew and tzitzis tied on Shabbos. So their question was, can they send these tzitzis to Chayalim, or do they? Is there anything they have to do? It happens to be, it's really a Yoredeya Shaila. It's a Shaila in Hilchus Taroves, right? Do you say that the tzitzis become Batal Barov? Do they not become Batal Barov? Okay, but that's one Shaila that came up. Another Shaila that came up, when I was in Yeshivat Shalavim, I guess in November, one of the boys came over to me, and he told me that that he had been Menachem Avel by the homes of one of the fallen soldiers. Anyone who's in Israel now always tries to make an effort to go be Menachem Avel. He said that the story was that this particular soldier was in an elite combat unit, which I've learned that the word elite, when they're describing an army unit, means really, really dangerous. So he's in an elite combat unit that was doing operations before the war. Meaning there was an army before October 7th also, and there were things going on. Even now, there are a lot of things going on that we don't know about. I was talking to a friend of mine who made just a quick 3-day trip to Israel last week, on his trip, he managed to do a lot of different things. He managed to visit in the hospital with one of the released hostages and make a Birch Sagomel with him through our base medrash. And one of the things that he was going for, he said that he has a close family member whose husband has been away for months. And he's in Syria. And I said, in Syria? What's he doing in Syria? He said, there are all these things you don't know about. The army's up to a million different things that we're not aware of. So anyway, so this soldier, who Nebuchadnezzar was killed in battle, was in a combat unit that was doing operations before the war even started on Yom Kippur. And he knew that he wasn't going to make it home on Yom Kippur. So he called his father before Yom Kippur, and he told him, I'm not going to make it home for Yom Kippur. He was very sad. He was a very religious boy. And the father said, do you have your machzor? Do you have your talis? He said, yes. I brought it just in case. I have my machzor and I have my talis. So that night, that Yom Kippur night, this young man led Kol Nidre for his entire unit, most of whom were not religious. But he was leading the Kol Nidre Tefillah. And his commander was so moved by the scene of this young man with the talis over his head leading Kol Nidre, that the commander took a picture of him. He took a picture of him leading Kol Nidre and the soldiers davening, being led by this young man. Then, a few weeks later, this soldier was killed in battle. The commanding officer brought the picture sent the picture to the family. Now, they wanted to know whether they're allowed to blow up the picture and put it on their wall, whether they're allowed to enlarge the picture and put it on their wall. What's the shayla? It's Melacha Shabbos, meaning this was a melacha done by a Jew on Yom Kippur. Are you allowed to be nana? Are you allowed to get hana'ah from a melacha that was done by a Jew on Yom Kippur? So he did this, whether for himself or for them, that might make a difference, but that was another shayla that came up. Another shayla that came up, I was when I was just visiting yeshivos, I was in Gush, and a 19-year-old boy came over to me, Shana Aleph, Shir Aleph, American Israeli, meaning his family had made aliyah, and he's in his first year base medrash, and he told me that every morning, since one of the local high schools, all of the rebbeim were called back in from Miluim, so they needed people to teach 9th grade Gemara. So this 19-year-old boy said, I'm teaching 9th grade Gemara in the local high school. So he said that, I said, how's it going? I remember what it was like to teach 9th graders, not a picnic. And he said, it's going great. He said, the kids are motivated to learn. They know it's Nes Tzara. It's going great. They're learning beautifully. I'm being Matzliach. So I said, so what's your question? He said, my question is, how long do I have to do this for? He said, I'm Shir Aleph. I should be learning with the Chavrusa. I should be learning, I should be growing in my own learning. So what's my responsibility as a Shir Aleph 19-year-old to be teaching 9th graders instead of learning? How long should I do it for? So what's the Shaila? Is that a Shaila or is that just an Eitza? What's the Shaila? So I thought it was a Shaila. I thought it was a Shaila because the halacha is for a Milchemes Mitzvah. Afilu kala mechupasa. What does it mean? Afilu kala mechupasa. Kala is not going to. The IDF doesn't run 100% al pi halacha, right? But al pi halacha, a woman doesn't join a combat unit. So what's the kala mechupasa? So she's going to be in a supportive role. That anything that helps support the efforts of the army is something that's part of the melchemes mitzvah. It's part of the war effort. So the shaila is, I'm over bar mitzvah, right? The halacha is anyone who's over bar mitzvah is chayv in mitzvahs. So if I bear responsibility for the Jewish people, over bar mitzvah, you may view me as young, as only 18 or 19 years old, but I'm over bar mitzvah, and if this is a way that I can help contribute, that I can keep society running, while the war is going on, maybe I'm obligated. And I don't have the right to say no, that I don't have the right to beg out of doing such things. Rav Schachter has such a beautiful way of formulating the idea that Torah must continue during the war, and that there should be we're not going to get into the political discussion or the or even the halachic discussion of how broad these exemptions should be. Rav Schachter often points out the idea that there should be an exemption for great Talmidei Chachamim to be able to sit and learn while a war is going on. The way Rav Schachter formulates that concept is that every country has an exemption in order to help maintain the culture of the country, even during times of war. So in the United States, for example, Hollywood actors would be exempt, and comedians, and because that's the culture of the country. So in order to make, but what's the culture of the Jewish people? The culture of the Jewish people is the Torah HaKadosha. So whatever is going to be necessary to maintain the learning of Torah makes sense that it should involve some sort of exemption. So this question was, this young man asked, am I obligated to stay teaching Gemara to ninth graders, or can I go back to the Beis Medrash and learn the way I'm supposed to learn? So that was a third Shaila. Should we go through all 10, or should I stop and then discuss some of the, I'll mention one more. You'll tell me what you want. Stop me when you want to stop me. Okay, a fourth Shaila I received was from someone in America who told me that he and his wife were B'Sha'a Tova expecting a child in a few months' time, and they do not know the gender of the child, which I find is what people say even when they do know the gender of the child. But he said that if it's a boy, they know exactly what they're going to name the child. They have a family name to choose from. I just spoke to a cousin of mine yesterday. I think she just had his 12th child, and I said, who's the baby named after? He said, my wife's great-great-great-grandmother. You know, they ran out of other names. So they do not know the gender of this child, they say, but if it's a boy, they have who to name after. Now, if it's a girl, they don't have who to name after in the family, and they've been reading stories and accounts of acts of heroism that were done by brave chayalot, by female soldiers, and particularly there was one that they read about that while fighting off terrorists saved the lives of 100 other chayalim on her base. And then they found other stories of a chayal and a medic who were killed while saving others, and they thought it would be a nice idea to name their daughter after one of these soldiers. So the question was, is there any halachic issue with doing so? What would the halachic issue be with doing so? A lot of times when you ask the shayla, you just have to figure out, like, what's the shayla? Meaning, what's the question? What would the halachic issue be? So, first of all, you don't want to name after someone that died a tragic death. Someone who had Reya Mazale, that they had a bad mazel, and we tried to avoid naming after people who died tragically young. And there's, you know, when a 19, 20-year-old young woman who was killed is certainly a very, very tragic death. Is there any way around that? So the way we normally solve that issue is you add a second name that's more cheerful. You know, you add a Simcha Chaim or something like that, or for a girl, some equivalent of that, you know, Chaya or whatever, something of that nature. So what, any other issue other than that? So there's another issue, and that is that, strictly speaking, the Gemara says that Shem Rishayim Yirkav, that one is not supposed to name after someone who was a Rasha. So the question is, what does that mean, a Rasha? You're going to call a soldier who died al Kiddush Hashem and goes straight to Olam Haba a Rasha? How could that possibly be? So there is a technical halachic definition of Rasha, which the Torah says, al Toshes Rasha Eid, that you're not allowed to have a Rasha as a witness. So what does that mean? Does that mean an evil person? It means someone who has a pointy eyebrows like that and looks at you funny and says nasty things to you every time and is like the picture of the Rasha in the Haggadah, or like, you know, so what does that mean, a Rasha, that you can't be an aid? It means someone who violates any Aveira for which you're Chayiv Malkus or worse on a regular basis. Right, so a person who regularly violates Averos is technically a Rasha. So the question is, that Isser to name after Rasha, does it mean that you're not allowed to name after someone who's not observant? Or does it just mean you're not supposed to name after someone who's actually evil? Right, meaning like Rav Shechter often points out, that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that there were these Hanu Bar Yoni, that there were these thugs that lived in Rav Meir's neighborhood, and they used to bother Rav Meir all the time. And he used to daven that they should die because they were driving him nuts. And his wife, Bruria, said to him, you know, it's not proper that you should daven that they should die, because the pasuk says, Yitamu chataim urishayim od einam. It doesn't say Yitamu chotim, that the sinners should die, should be finished, and then rishayim od einam, and then there won't be rishayim, but Yitamu chataim urishayim od einam. When the chataim are gone, then there won't be any more Rishaim. So Shachta points out, I think from one of the Rishonim, that most people mistranslate that Gemara. That we translate the Gemara, Yitamu Chataim, is what Puri said, let the sins die, and therefore you should just daven that they should do tshuva. And that's the way some Rishonim understand for sure. However, Shachta likes to quote that Chataim doesn't only mean sins. Chataim means someone who is the embodiment of sin. You know, similar to like when we say va'ani tefila. When you say va'ani tefila, what does that mean? I am a tefila? But there are some people that the way they daven, it takes over their entire essence. If you ever daven near Rav Shechter, try to like say the words along with him. He davens loud enough, even when I say, you'll be able to hear. You can say the words along with him. You'll be so inspired. You'll be changed forever. Meaning it's to see the embodiment of tefila. Chatoyim means that yes, you're allowed to daven that certain Rishayim should die, but dafka Rishayim who are the embodiment of wickedness, the embodiment of evil. But not every chote, not everyone that does an aveira. So the question is, when it comes to naming after somebody, is it only Shem Rishayim Yerkov, you're not allowed to name after someone who is the embodiment of evil? Or you're not allowed to name after anyone who's a Baal Aveira, someone who violates Shabbos, someone who violates Kashrus, someone who violates any of the Los Hases that you're Chayiv Malkus for. So that was and the caveat to that, I'm spending a little more time in this question, the caveat to that is that, let's say her entire life she was Michal Shabbos, right? Tinuk Shanishba, no education, nothing. You're going to, and let's say you wouldn't name after someone who violates Shabbos, but someone who dies because they're a Jew in an act of heroism, so at that moment they become a Kadosh. So it could be that their entire lives they lived a certain way, but then it all changed at the end of their lives. I was very moved. Someone sent me, a friend of mine, Mike Smith, sent me a video of an interview done with a Haredi woman on Israeli television. It's in Hebrew, but they have subtitles. For some reason, I have a hard time understanding, but I have an easier time reading. I mean, it's obvious, because I read Hebrew all day, but I don't listen to Hebrew all day. But it had Hebrew subtitles, so I was able to follow the interview. It was a Haredi woman whose son, she has a large family, as Haredim often do, and one of her sons did not exactly follow the path of the family, and he was very into music, and so he ended up at this music festival, and Nebuchadnezzar was killed at the music festival, and on Israeli television they were interviewing her about her relationship with her son, and she was describing what was a very, very warm, loving, special relationship, and she said that, you know, like she said that we went So her husband, she and her husband were walking in Yerushalayim, and they walked right past Ben Yehuda. They said, you know, let's stop in the bar that he works in, you know, and say hello to him. Like on Sunday. So they stopped in the bar, and like all of his friends came and said to, and went over to them and said, you know, it's amazing that you maintain such a relationship with him. And she said, people say it's amazing. If they knew how Zisi was, it's not amazing at all. He's just such a sweetie pie. Like anyone would love him. It's hard not to love. But anyway, so she was talking about her son, and she said that she used to tell him that she loves him so much as a Jewish mother. She's always concerned about him, and so she wants him to be happy. And she's and she's very gratified that he found some level of happiness in his life through his music and through other things. She said, but I worry about your Olam Haba. You know, like I don't know what's going to be with your Olam Haba, and that's what I'm worried about. And she said it never occurred to her that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take care of that. That he'll get his Olam Haba, and that he's going to go straight to Olam Haba. It never occurred to her that wasn't her cheshbon to worry about his Olam Haba. It was just like such a jarring thing to hear someone say. So you're not going to name after a female soldier who gave her life because Shem Rishayim Yerkov, hard to imagine that would be the case, considering the circumstances under which she gave her life. There was a third element of that Shaila, though. So we said one element is naming after someone who died tragically, which, by the way, there are lots of tshuvas on that topic, because it came up in the generation immediately following the Holocaust. Everyone had family members who were killed in the Holocaust, and it was under tragic circumstances, obviously. The Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky at the time said, you're not supposed to name after someone who had bad mazel. Someone who was killed is one of 6 million. You can't attribute that to their mazel. That's the mazel of the entire nation. And they were just part of Klal Yisrael. It's not... a similar argument could likely be made over here as well. The second issue was Shem Rishayim Yerkov. Okay, so we said we could dismiss that fairly easily. Third issue, they said, is that he looked at what their names were, and they are Amit, Adar, and Eden. And he said, I send my kids to Beis Yaakov. They're going to be made fun of relentlessly for the rest of their lives if they have these names that are... So that's a shaila also. Can you name your kid a name that they're going to be embarrassed about the rest of their lives? Probably one of the more difficult shailas that came up. I got a call from an Israeli rabbi, and I, to this day, have no idea why he called me. And he said that there's a fellow in his community who was granted 2 days out of the army, 2 days off, a two-day break, a two-day respite. And the way it works is that the family doesn't get much advance warning that daddy's coming home. If they did, they wouldn't have all those cool videos, you know. So they don't have much advance warning. And he was coming home on Thursday afternoon, and he had 48 hours at home. He had to report back to his base on Shabbos afternoon at 2 p.m. That was that's when his respite was over. So normally, under normal circumstances, he's not going to drive on Shabbos. He can't get a non-Jew to drive him to a highly secure base, whatever. So you're not going to get an Arab driver to do that. So he obviously has to get back to his base. So under normal circumstances, he said he would go before Shabbos. The 48 hours would become 30 hours, and that's what he would spend with his family, and then he'd go back before Shabbos, not to have to drive on Shabbos. He hadn't seen his wife in 3 months. And his wife's mikveh night was Friday night. So if he goes back before Shabbos, he's not going to be able to give his wife a hug, even, when he's home. Or can he drive back on Shabbos? So this is the kind of question that when an Israeli rabbi calls an American rabbi and asks this kind of question, the immediate response is, you need to ask an Israeli rabbi. Meaning, this is for Rav Rimon, this is for Rav Asher Weiss, this is not for an American rabbi. I was later vindicated that I know it's not for an American rabbi, because I called up a different American rabbi friend of mine, and I said, what do you think of this Shaila? He said, I think that he should speak to his commanding officer and just say, you know, I'd like to make it back a few hours later after Shabbos is over. Like, is that even how the army works? Like, do you know anything about the army? Like, are you able to do that? Meaning, if you speak to Rav Rimon, he served in the army. He would know whether that's even something, that's even a conversation that can be had. But an American rabbi just said, yeah, you know, work it out with the boss. You know, like, you can always work it out with the boss. It's not, so that's something that Israeli rabbi. Now, it's interesting. The shaila was, the rabbi called me, do you know of any heter to let her go to the mikvah a night early? That was the way he formulated it. Is there a way she can go to the mikvah Thursday night instead of Friday night? So the problem. Oh, good. So the whole idea of waiting 5 days before you start counting Shiva Nikiyim is a chumra al gabi chumra, right? And the mechaber is not machmir for that. Only the Ramah is machmir for it. Problem is, she said I had stopped bleeding after 4 days. I didn't need that fifth day, but I didn't start counting my Shiva Nikiyim until after 5 days. So the idea that a woman could go to the mikvah without Shiva Nikiyim, so that's not just, that's also a chumrah, but it's a different chumrah. It's the chumrah of Rabbi Zeira. The Gemara says that Rabbi Zeira benosi Yisrael l'chmiru al atzman shafil rose tibasam chardal yoshasal Shiva Nikiyim. That every woman nowadays who's tamei is automatically treated like a zava gadola and requires Shiva Nikiyim. So to let a woman go to the mikvah without having done Shiva Nikiyim is unprecedented in 2,000 years. But it's a chumrah. Driving on Shabbos, melacha d'oraisa, chiyuv skila. Every time you hit the gas, maybe you get an electric car. It's in this drabanan, but still, it's a melacha drabanan. We have a rebbe in yeshiva who has a brother who's a surgeon in Florida, and the brother was in the market for a new car. The surgeon was in the market for a new car, and he has to go into the hospital sometimes on Shabbos. He's called in for emergencies. So he asked his brother, who's a Rebbe in yeshiva here, how much extra money do I have to spend to buy a Tesla so that it won't be Malacha D'Oraisa when I drive on Shabbos. It'll only be Malacha D'Rabbanan, likely. It could be that turning on the car is D'Oraisa, but at least every time you hit the gas, or whatever you call it, the electric pedal, or however you drive a Tesla, it's just weird. Everything's different in a Tesla. So it could be that each time it's only a Malacha D'Rabbanan. So he asked his brother, who's a Rebbe here, how much extra do I have to spend? He said, how much extra? Call Mamono! All of your money you need to spend in order to avoid D'Oraisa. Not everyone agrees with that psak, by the way. The brother's a surgeon. Whatever he was going to buy was going to be a similar price range as a Tesla anyway. So it's perfectly fine. He's happy with his. I assume he's happy with his Tesla. But so you would imagine of the two options, where option number one is forego the chumrah of Rabbi Zeira, which is a chumrah that the Gemara doesn't even say the rabbis instituted. I'm Rabbi Zeira, Benos Yisrael Hichmiru al Atzman. Meaning, chances are she's not a Zava Gadola, she's a Nida. A Nida on a Daraisa level only requires 7 days total, not 7 clean days. So you would think that that's a Chumrah. And yet, on the other hand, Chilul Shabbos, you know, Chiyuv Skila, every time you hit the gas, you would think that if you're going to have to make a choice of where to be Makel, of course you're going to be Makel on the Chumrah. Yet, you will not find a single Rav that's going to be Makel on that Chumrah. If anyone's going to be Makel, it's going to be on the driving on Shabbos, which is a Pella, right? Why is that so? Because even though the Rabbi Zeira is only a Chumrah, it's a Chumrah that's been observed without any argument for 2,000 years. There's no Machlokas B'davar whatsoever. There's no Machlokas about it. Driving on Shabbos to save lives, even when you know that you're going to have to do it before Shabbos, is at least a Machlokas. Meaning if, let's say, this is not a unique Shaila, a person is a doctor and they know that they're going to, a person is a cardiologist who performs very pikuach nefesh, everything he does is pikuach nefesh, and he knows that he's going to have to be in the hospital 10 a.m. on Saturday morning. Does he have to start Shabbos in the hospital? So it's a machlokas. It's a machlokas aposkim. Rav Moshe's machmir says absolutely he has to start Shabbos in the hospital. Happens to be Rav Shlomo Zalman is mekel, that he allows him to drive on Shabbos, because it's pikuach nefesh at that moment, and you don't have to plan in advance necessarily. So when Rav Asher Weiss was presented with the shayla, ultimately made its way to where it should have gone in the first place, right? And Rav Asher Weiss was presented with the shayla. He said, I can never be mekel to go to the mikvah without Shiva Nikiyim, and I don't like to be mekel like Rav Shlomo Zalman, that the person could drive on Shabbos. I prefer not to, but given the circumstances, that's what we're going to have to go with. That's what we're going to have to be lenient with. Looks like I'm ready. Maybe time for one more question. Okay, this one. I was talking to a friend of mine who has a son who's a sniper in the army, and when his unit took over a particular neighborhood in Gaza, they took over a very fancy neighborhood. Not every neighborhood in Gaza is slums. Some of them are very fancy neighborhoods. So as a sniper, his immediate unit of snipers has to find the high ground. They have to find the highest place, and that's where they operate out of. So they went into a fancy apartment building, and they took over a penthouse apartment that had, you know, been evacuated, you know, by people who ran to safety. And he opened up a drawer in the apartment, and he saw four Rolexes in the drawer. So he wanted to know, spoils of war? You know, can he take a Rolex or two with him on his way out? So is that so that's really not a shaila. Of course he cannot. Of course he cannot. It's also a stupid idea. Someone told me afterwards that every I don't know much about watches, but someone told me afterwards that every Rolex has a serial number on the back, and if you ever try to sell it, they'll know exactly where it came from, and it's gonna it could be a PR disaster if you would do such a thing. Where the shaila really came up is that the army has a policy that you know that the soldiers are not allowed to take anything. Any house, any home that has any Hamas insignia or flag or anything, they were just destroying such homes. What about stuff in those homes that they're about to destroy anyway? Nobody's ever coming back to that home. Whatever's inside is going to be destroyed. So is a soldier allowed to take something that anyway is going to be destroyed inside those homes? That was another shaila. Rav Rimon actually wrote a tshuva on this topic, and he said that absolutely not. Happens to be the halacha is that you're allowed to take spoils of war, but not for yourself. The halacha is that it's supposed to go to the melech, and it's supposed to be divided in a certain way between the combat soldiers and the people who are playing a supportive role, and the melech himself. There are detailed halachos about the not for people to just stuff their pockets with Rolexes. That's not the way that it was meant to be. And Rav Rimon just thought as a you know that considering what the focus of a soldier has to be on carrying out his mission, you know, every little thing that they carry with them means that they're not carrying something else. There's only so much that a person could carry around. So you don't want a soldier to think about, oh, but you know, if I make it back and I could sell this for you know $15,000, and that, and you don't want them thinking that. Just carry out the mission. They need to be focused on the mission at hand, and they shouldn't be weighed down, whether it be physically weighed down or emotionally, mentally weighed down with other things. These are just some of the shailas that have come across my desk in the last few months, and it's I think the overall theme is that it's inspiring to see the way the Jewish people are thinking since October 7th, since the Simchas Torah War began. Not just the way that we're acting, which hopefully is with continued support for our chayalim and for everyone who's going through a variety of things in Eretz Yisrael, and not just with continued sincere, passionate, tear-filled tefillah that should not wane over time, as long as there are people, as long as there are mothers of chayalim who cannot sleep at night. Our tehillim after davening shouldn't just be something that you kind of say as you're wrapping up your tefillin. In our yeshiva, we're still saying Avinu Malkeinu every single day. We asked Rav Shechter, Ad Masai, until when? And he said, if people don't feel it anymore, so then you can't say it anymore. But how could someone not feel it anymore? Like he can't even relate. Like how could someone not feel it anymore? How's that even possible? So we have to work on ourselves to make sure that the way that we're acting, the way that we're behaving, the way that we're davening is different. But to see through shailas, the way that we're thinking is entirely different. And when all of this is over and we're matzliach and Kodesh Baruch Hu provides us with the Yeshua, we should be able to hold on to this sense of Klal Yisrael and the sense of wanting to connect with all members of Klal Yisrael. We should be able to hold on to that very tightly, because ultimately that is what's going to bring the ultimate Geula. Have a wonderful day, everybody.